So we're here for another episode of Inside Out. Special guest today we have from Cakewalk. Tell us about yourselves. Who are you? What do you do?
My name is Noel Bothwick. I'm CTO of Cakewalk, and I work on development for Sonar and other applications.
Okay.
And my name is Carl Jacobson. I'm the marketing director worldwide for Cakewalk.
Excellent. So you guys build Sonar, is an audio application, right? What does it do? How does it work?
Well, Sonar is the technology-leading multi-track digital audio workstation. It's the first application in our industry to support Windows Vista, both 32-bit and 64-bit.
Great.
It was also the first application to support multi-core computing. It intelligently balances the load across multiple threads. And it allows you to do things like record unlimited tracks of audio, unlimited tracks of MIDI, work with virtual instruments, manipulate audio timing, fix vocals.
Nice,
just basically, you should think of it like anything that you can imagine wanting to do with audio or music in general, you can do with this application.
Outstanding.
It's interesting. It's like our application started out like probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, it started it's our 20th anniversary, actually.
Congratulations.
On DOS.
Yeah. And it started out as a DOS application. It was probably the first application for DOS, which was a MIDI sequencer for DOS, which our founder Greg Hendershot wrote. And over the years, it's evolved. It started out as this DOS app. It went into Windows 3.1, and from there, it started supporting audio. It was the first application to actually support, integrated MIDI with audio.
The first 32-bit app for Windows 95. Yeah, we've been...
You guys are rocking and rolling.
Yeah, we stay really close to Microsoft.
Let me ask you this. You go from a 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit, but let's talk more about the operating system in the sense that in 95 and earlier, in 2000 and XP, the audio subsystem is a kernel. Kernel mode and construct. We changed that in Vista. We made a bunch of changes, and so a lot of people get concerned with, was that going to affect my performance because it's not in the kernel anymore? Let's talk about your experience with the new audio subsystem in Vista, and then we'll get into multi-core because that's a fascinating issue. It's impressive to hear you guys have worked that out.
Well, talking about the audio engine in Vista, we first started getting involved with that in probably 2003 when Microsoft had PDC. PDC-03, basically. And then even before that, we've been pretty much in the loop with Microsoft technologies. And around that time, our whole engine and our application was very much, based on direct show.
Okay.
The direct show model, which is filter graphs and filters and stuff like that. And, we got a nice surprise from Microsoft when we, in 2003, they said, direct show is deprecated. So we're not going to be doing any further work on direct show. So we said, thank you. And we went back and we basically rewrote the core of our application and switched our entire engine over to not be based on direct show anymore.
Okay.
And we kind of structured our components and our design so that we'd be compatible with what's coming in Vista. It was Longhorn at that time.
Excellent. Yeah. And of course, it was Longhorn of 2003.
Correct,
Which had all kinds of interesting ideas.
Yeah. So we really started with that, we started with Vista development really early.
Cool.
That was the first step. And then as we went along,
you were laying the groundwork for what was coming. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Why? Why do you follow us so closely, and why are you so aligned with Microsoft platform?
That. Well, we try to position ourselves as the technology leader, and I believe that Microsoft offers superior solutions. So it's important to us to be first for our customers. A good percentage of our customers are those early adopters, and we like to be able to give them things like 64-bit computing so that they can really maximize their experience with it.
Mm-hmm. And certainly 64-bit is important in highly memory-intensive applications Sonar.
Yeah. It gives you the ability to address up to 128 gigabytes of RAM, and where that really benefits film composers in particular, but anybody that likes to work with sample content, by having that much RAM, you can use larger, more realistic sound banks. You don't have to actually rely on multiple computers anymore to play your sample content. You can do it all right within there. And then you also have the processing efficiency enhancements as well.
Yeah, nice. Because 64-bit computers typically have like a much larger expanded set of registers. Mm. And as you know, it's like having extra registers can speed up your the way your compiler builds optimizations to do mixing.
Yeah.
So our application is very mixing intensive. We do lots of computations to mix. So the extra registers in 64-bit mode, they give you a benefit just there.
Yeah, in fact, we're the only application in our industry to have a 64-bit audio engine. And so that's separate from the 64-bit processing. We actually have the highest bit depth of audio quality of anyone, so that gives you more dynamic range and higher quality mixes. So the 64-bit processing actually makes it more efficient, so you can get more tracks, more instruments.
Excellent. Just get more things happening simultaneously.
Yeah, more flexibility.
Cool. So let me ask you, I mean, what were some of the challenges you guys had when you moved from XP, you know, as I keep harping on, I mean, when you make architectural changes to the platform upon which you depend, clearly there's going to be some work that you have to do.
Yes.
So really I'd be interested to know, what was your experience? I mean, how good of a job did we do in terms of when we changed the architecture of the audio subsystem? How much work did you have to do to get your app to work on Vista?
Well, there are multiple facets to that question. I mean, it's like we did, when we kind of looked at what we wanted to do to make our application Vista compliant, and there are obviously aspects to doing new features. You know, it's like we picked a few features which are like special to Vista.
Okay.
And there were some features which were not necessarily special to Vista, but which we needed to make architectural changes to our application too, in order just to be able to run properly on Vista and to provide a better user experience. So to tackle those, it's like the one where we needed to make changes just for the better experience would be user account control in Vista UAC.
Yeah.
That's an acronym which is probably created a lot of compatibility issues for the application, for XP applications.
Sure.
Because the classic scenario, at least in the DAW world and with lots of other applications out there, is that they need to run as with administrative access privileges. So, and our application was in the same category. It's like, to be able to run Sona, you had to be an administrator on the computer.
Why is that?
Because we wrote a lot of information to the registry, areas of the registry. Additionally, we wrote stuff to the file system,
like in program files or documents, and settings,
exactly,
or whatever.
In program files, I mean, we had like, you know, any files which we wrote there.
Yeah.
And if you run your application as a non-administrator in Vista, it'll just block access to that.
Sure.
So,
but they did do some work with virtualization so that some apps wouldn't really know what was going on. But of course, it's not a silver bullet.
Virtualization is very confusing to an end user, and I strongly wouldn't recommend people to rely on virtualization because it creates really strange scenarios where your application will misbehave. Like a classic scenario is like, you know, you install an application and you have an .ini file, and the .ini file gets written, and it gets written into the virtual place, and you expect there are certain paths in the registry which might not point to the virtual location directly. And, you know, you get all kinds of strange scenarios in the app, and we ran into those.
Yeah.
So we quickly realized that the only way to really address this problem was to make the application UAC compliant.
Sure. Well, I mean, application compatibility is a really big deal right now. I mean, in fact, they just created app readiness as a WindowsVista.com WAC app readiness was just launched. It's actually some people close to our team that have launched that. And so that's why I'm asking. It's kind of interesting to see what happens when we change the platform. And
yeah, I would say that was the biggest, single biggest thing that we needed to rev, because it runs wide and deep in the application. It wasn't just the application, it was every plugin that the application references. You know, plugins are just DLLs.
Yeah.
And we load up DLLs, and DLLs can persist information to the registry or to your file system. And we needed to revise every single DLL which we shipped to make sure that it was compliant with this.
Excellent.
So it's a lot of work.
So now you guys have a plugin architecture so that developers can write little you know, components that modify your app.
Yeah, we've introduced a technology in Sonar 6 called active controller technology. And what that allows MIDI manufacturers and people that manufacture control surfaces to do is to write a special plugin to interface with our application. And what it allows you to do is, no matter what you have focus on in the application, the control surface will be remapped. So you don't actually have to manually remap everything. So if you pull up a mix engine, you'll be able to control it. If you then pull up an effect, you'll be able to control that. If you bring up a virtual instrument, you'll be able to control that. So it just saves a lot of time, and it's much more ergonomic. It's like having a tech right there for you, but built into the application.
Right, and we've got the control surface SDK, which, you know, people writing hardware control surfaces these days, users want to use hardware. So it's like they set up their studios, they have these huge mixing consoles, and they want to control the mixer and the application using these consoles. So we have an SDK which allows you to actually write like a DLL, which has custom code to talk to these surfaces.
Yeah, when you're mixing, you know, 64 tracks of audio or 100 tracks of audio with one mouse, that's like having one finger to control everything. But when you get one of these control surfaces, you can spread out and have real knobs and real faders to control the application.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
So what's the demographic? I mean, the technical demographic, if you will, of the people that use your software. I mean, are these professional musicians? Are these movie studios? You mentioned movie studios. Like, who's using this app?
Everyone from music students and weekend warriors, maybe people that at one time in their life they played in a rock band and they just want to do some stuff on their own at home.
Cool.
All the way up to professional producers, engineers, and film composers.
Excellent.
And all of us too. I mean,
yeah, all of us too.
Most of us in the company are musicians, so that's, you know, we eat our own dog food.
Now, are you guys basically the Sonar a Windows only app?
Yes, Sonar.
Sonar is a Windows only app.
Yeah, we make a range of Digitality workstations. Those are all PC only. We also have virtual instruments, which are also, I believe, the first ones to support Windows Vista, Dimension Pro, and Rapture. And those happen to be dual platform, so those also will run on a Mac. And we have a line of integrated hardware and software, and that's some of the first audio hardware actually to support Vista, with Vista's 32-bit and 64-bit drivers married to Sonar, so you get a complete solution of high-quality interfaces and software. And we have consumer products as well. So things that allow you to create ringtones, burn CDs, do basic audio recording if you don't know anything about it, make music if you don't really know much about making music. Right? Yeah. So it runs the gamut.
Right.
Cool. So what's so intriguing about audio? I mean, why'd you get into this madness?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah, I would ask both of you guys.
Well, I got into Cakewalk because I was a user, like a lot of people, some guys in this room. I'm a guitar player.
All right.
And I started with sequencing like probably in the really early 90s. And the first sequencer I ever used on Windows was Cakewalk Professional version 1 for Windows. And I got really interested in the application, and I started writing scripts for it because we had this application language built into Cakewalk called CAL. It's called the Cakewalk application language.
Nice.
That's what attracted me to it at first. And then once we got audio support into the application, I became a beta tester. And the rest is history. I joined the company and I started writing software for Cakewalk.
Nice. Now you're the CTO.
Oh.
Right on, man.
And for me, it started probably when I was about 15 or 16 years old. I was a guitar player, and one day I was reading liner notes to a record, and I saw a name that I had seen on other records, and I had this epiphany that there are people that help people make music. So I could bring a certain amount of music into the world myself as a guitar player, but if I became a music businessman, I could actually empower musicians and help them make music. So at the time, I thought the way to do that would be to work for a major record label. So I went to school for music business and then got a job at a major record label. I quickly learned that they're in the business of business, not in the business of helping musicians. And a friend of mine worked at Cakewalk, and he called me up and said, "Hey, remember that DOS program that we used in college to do our music theory assignments?" I'm like, yeah, Cakewalk, that was awesome. And he said, "Well, it's come a long way since then, and I think you'd really like it. Do you want to come up and join the marketing team?" Nice, so man. I came up, interviewed with everybody. Everybody was a musician. I got along with everyone, and it was really more in line with what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. to empower people. You know, there are blind users that could never do their own recording, and because we work so well with Windows accessibility features, we enable them to do everything themselves. Yeah, we hear from our customers all the time that we enable them to realize their dreams of making professional recordings, and so it's just totally a positive, awesome thing.
That's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a very, very exciting experience to be able to, you know, work in the software industry and write, programming is programming no matter what you're doing, but when you're writing something for a cause which you believe in, you know, it makes a big difference.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, it's we get to be creative and help creative people.
Cool. So now let's dive a little bit down into the rabbit hole I'm really interested in multi-core. And the evolution of computing that this is going to definitely foster. So let's talk about it. I mean, you say you're the first application that can take advantage of a multi-engine processor. What do you mean? Let's talk about
that. Well, multi-processing is pretty well-defined science.
Certainly.
I mean, everybody knows about it. But it's essentially, you know, writing code which is multi-threaded and doing good resource management so that you can, you know, good multi-threading applications will subdivide tasks up into bite-sized elements and then allow multiple threads to act on those tasks. So our applications have always been multi-threaded. I mean, always since probably...
Even earlier when it was multiple socket. Yeah.
I think we did multiprocessing support way back in 1997 or 1998.
Yeah, you know, my first machine when I worked
before.
Was a dual 333, so yeah, we were doing it then.
Cool. Well, we supported multiple threads. I mean,
sure.
We didn't really take it to the extent... We had, like, graphical threads, and we had the engine.
Yeah.
You know, so we had, like, very coarse subdivision in the early ages. But way back in Sona 3, I believe that was in 2003, when we did the rewrite, when we switched over from DirectShow to actually doing this framework for our audio engine, we built it so that it could support multiple cores. And we did this whole resource manager, which allows you to subdivide tasks and and break it up.
Yeah, so it's really scalable, too.
Yeah, it's very scalable.
It'll we didn't write it to a specific number of cores. So, you know, if you brought up a machine that had 8 cores, Sonar would intelligently allocate everything.
You will get 8 threads.
Yeah.
Nice. If you have 8 cores on your machine, you get 8 audio threads, which and you can actually configure that, although it doesn't really make much sense to use more audio threads than a core because they're going to fight against each other. But it's pretty amazing. It's like there are people who are running, you can run like a dual core quad machine, and it just scales.
There's a producer, his name's Alan Sides, and he is, he's won a few Grammys, he's recorded over 400 albums, he's worked with people like from Frank Sinatra to Fergie.
Nice.
And he was getting fed up with one of our competitors' solutions.
Uh-huh.
I won't name drop.
Good.
But so somebody recommended to him that he try out Sonar, so he decided to do an A/B shoot. You know, it's a shootout between the two applications. So he was running a Mac, and he wanted to record Mary J. Blige with a 40-piece orchestra, a choir, and so he was going to record 48 tracks simultaneously. And so
at 192K?
At 192 kilohertz.
Okay.
So he was able to do that on one dual quad-core machine with Sonar.
Okay.
Recording 24-bit, 192 kilohertz simultaneously. And
nice.
On the flip side, he had to use our competitor's application, two instances of it linked together with two Macintoshes, and he was only able to get 96 kilohertz. So half the audio quality, requiring two Macs. So I mean, that just kind of gives you evidence of a dual quad core, that multiprocessing.
It's like large scale computing, you know.
It's like ridiculous how much you can do with it. We haven't been able to make it break. You know, we haven't been able to make a dual quad core sweat even.
Sure, but of course, you had to do a lot of work. I mean, you had to do a lot of coding.
Oh well,
yes,
yeah. Well, it's evolution. It's happened.
Yeah.
Like as I said, it's
gradually
like we started on that in 2003.
And debugging
is
difficult.
Yeah.
Highly concurrent applications.
Concurrent debugging
is very
tricky.
Well.
Yeah.
So hopefully in the future there'll be a nicer platform that'll help you.
Yeah, it really. I mean, right now, debugging multi-threaded applications, it's pretty much the techniques you use date back to the last 10 years or 15 years. It's not really changed. Mm. You know, debuggers don't, I mean, besides giving you like contexts and showing you stacks for, you know, your different cores, they won't help you debug your program.
Yeah.
You pretty much have to know how to debug your program and, you know, put in instrumentation or...
Yeah.
It's it would really be cool if Microsoft could come out with technologies that made life easier for large-scale development like this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You hear that, guys?
Yeah.
We hear that. We hear it. That's cool.
Yeah.
Good to know. So what? Let's talk. What's the evolution? What's going on? What can we expect? You know, not necessarily exactly in the future, but like, what do you? What's your next thing? For example, are you guys thinking about perhaps making it possible for me to write add-ins that are written in managed code? Are you going to have any sort of .NET support in your API? Is it always going to be unmanaged?
Well, it really, at least the way we understand it, mm-hmm. I don't see there's any advantage to us writing managed code for our application.
Okay.
It's like the kind of use case scenarios that we do, it's like real-time audio streaming. You know, I haven't seen any good reason for us to switch to like using managed code in our application. So it's all C++. It's all, in fact, we still use some kind of antique technologies like MFC.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's evolving.
Yeah, it's evolving. But
okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily mean rewriting your app in managed code, but
yeah.
More. It would seem like do you still have that Cal sort of scripting?
Oh yeah, Cal.
There
Cal.
You go.
Yeah. Well, people can Cal
is stuff
for
obsolete.
Cal in a text
it's
editor.
Like we've kind
yeah.
of deprecated Cal, unfortunately. I mean, that's what attracted me to the application in the first place. So I would
yeah.
love to see that develop, but
yeah.
you know, it's a very fringe market. I mean, we have passionate users who would love to do stuff like that. You
mm-hmm.
know, technical savvy users,
mm-hmm.
but some people couldn't care less about being able to script the application.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like. It's a toss when product management has to pick features.
Mm.
It's kind of tricky. Yeah.
Cool. So product management does that in your company as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how
yeah.
it works, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, your customers are the ones, though, that are picking your features for
well,
you.
Yeah, they listen
yeah.
to our customers. We
uh-huh.
have a very active forum, probably one of the most active forums out there. And people like Noel and myself will actually get up on the forum to answer questions and
excellent, man.
And to address, you know, complaints in the instance when we have them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so.
Well, it's important.
But, you know, talking about, like, managed code again,
yeah.
one of the primary reasons why we don't do stuff like that is, like, efficiency considerations.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, in a real-time streaming application, it's like every cycle counts. And, you know, trying to do stuff in managed code and going through .NET and all these layers that are in the technology just mm-hmm. wouldn't cut it.
Sure.
So.
Well, then again, but on Vista, you know, the whole audio subsystem was abstracted up into user mode. So you have that level of
we don't use the Vista audio subsystem.
Huh.
We have our own audio engine, which is probably way more complex than Vista's audio engine. So
that's important to know.
Yeah.
So all right. So you've written the kernel mode component.
No. Well, the audio engine is not it's not kernel mode. It's user
mm-hmm.
mode. But the Sonar audio engine is user mode.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what the Sonar audio engine is doing is like routing audio through complex topologies and mixing, you know, various endpoints in your topology into
mm.
components. And then finally, at the end of your graph, we deliver audio to your device driver. So when we deliver audio to your device driver, we are basically going through, we use kernel streaming,
mm-hmm.
or we use WaveRT, which is the new Vista technology,
mm-hmm.
or we use ASIO. We have or MME. We're completely open. We have like four models now.
Cool.
So, the only time we really touch the kernel is when it's actually getting out of the system.
Okay.
So everything in the system is all in user mode.
Perfect. So Sonar can't crash at Vista.
No, it won't crash Vista. The driver can crash this.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually, it's kind of funny. We had we added a new feature to Sonar called crash protection.
Nice.
And it was running so stably on Vista, we couldn't actually demo it. So one night at a trade show, Noel went back to his room and coded a plugin specifically to crash the application called
yeah.
Crash Me.
It's called
nice.
Acme Crash Me.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, because typically when when the application crashes now, it would either be a device driver or a, you know, a third-party faulty plugin that wasn't coded very well.
We do have bugs, you know.
No, these are not the droids you're looking for.
There's no bugs in these. Yeah. Software doesn't have bugs.
But this is pretty cool. I mean, the fact that we can now we trap errors, and if your application crashes on you, you get a chance to save your project, which is all you really care about, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, if you're in the middle of a show like this, you don't want it to crash on you. But
sure. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, again, coming back to Vista. So Vista, we have the new sort of reliability infrastructure, so, you know, in diagnostics, so that when your app crashes, you can actually tell Vista to record a whole bunch more information than you ever have been able to before on one of our operating systems.
Are you talking about WER?
Could be, yeah. I mean, well, I mean, let's...
Well, you kind of get WER for free, right? I mean... When you crash, if you set up your computer just to collect a crash dump, it goes to WER, and we actually, as a company, we have an account with WER, and we go in and we check crash dumps periodically.
Excellent.
And we download the crash info and open it up in Visual Studio or in WinDebug, and we find the crash sites and try and fix them.
Sure. I mean that technology has evolved. Well, you're talking about Watson error reporting.
Kind of, yeah.
So that is part of the technology, but there's also other parts of the technology specific to Vista, which gives you a little bit more control of, like, saving state, registering to save. Your application crashes, you'll be able to automatically save the state that it was in, the data state, and then come back up
in the same state.
In the same state.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
So it's interesting stuff. Yeah. I mean, we haven't done a good job evangelizing it, but
I actually haven't heard.
It's on Channel 9. So check it out, man.
Check
out the diagnostics videos on Channel 9.
That sounds interesting.
You'll be stoked.
Thank you for telling me.
Totally. But, hey, you know, it's good to share some knowledge and learn from you guys. So, you know, we talked about where you guys are going, and then we got sidetracked. I guess I sidetracked.
Yeah, you know, the playing field's pretty leveled in our industry as far as feature sets, you know. So I think the way that companies are really going to innovate is user interface enhancements and making it easier for people to do what they want to do, automating tasks that may have been a bit more grueling, you know, or take multiple steps, you know, making it easier for people to stay in that creative flow space that they're accustomed to as musicians. And that's one of the things I like about Vista is, you know, it's a next generation operating system that has a lot of stuff built in there. So I imagine, I'm a marketing guy, I don't really know, but I imagine that there are more hooks that we'll be able to get into the operating system as we continue to develop it to help people take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are definitely cool features which we'll probably take advantage of going forward. I mean, like, one of the things which I liked about Vista was, like, just in terms of, you know, helping people like us developers find problems in the field is, like, being able to capture, you know, some kind of instrumentation information. And we actually have a fairly sophisticated system which we use for our beta testing, where we actually log information and collect that and analyze that and try and, you know, fix bugs based on that. But Vista has, you can do that at runtime in a retail product. So that's something I'm interested in.
That's a huge, I mean, and that's very important that people have to understand.
Yeah.
And it's for, especially for developers.
Right, because, you know, we have, like, really esoteric problems sometimes with interactions between plugins and components, which it's kind of impossible for a technical support person to analyze and figure out. I mean, a customer calls in and says, it doesn't work. But to try and get to the point where you can actually find out what is causing this can be very difficult.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Very cool, you guys. So, you know, as part of Inside Out, I would just ask you, you know, give me some feedback. Like what do you need? Like, what kind of feedback do you want to give to the Vista team or to
the Vista team?
Yeah, come on, man, they're watching.
Well, I'll tell you about one of the biggest problems we had when moving towards Vista. Maybe we were early adopters, you know, so that made it worse. But the documentation out there has a lot to be desired.
Still.
Oh yes.
Okay.
So it's like we did all this cutting edge stuff for WebRT and MMCSS, and it's pretty much I had to contact people on the development teams to get information out of them, and even they had incorrect information at times.
Okay,
it's like they would report, like, this API works this way, and I would try it out, and it didn't work that way. So it's like, you know, the documentation was either out of date or, you know.
Well, they were just testing you. I mean, that's all.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's so, cool. So documentation needs a little needs a little love. All right.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's the development team that does this, but in the Vista certification program, I'd like to see the requirement to use the Vista installer lifted so that we
can get the Windows installer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, right now you can't get Vista certified.
Unless is it MSI?
Right. So,
yeah.
The MSI
unless you use MSI, you can't get Vista certified, and we found it to be poorly documented and a little buggy. And
yeah, I mean, like MSI, it's pretty much you have to have a Microsoft certification to understand how to use MSI. You know, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. We're a fairly small company, and you know, we have release management people who do our installers, and they're not super technical people. You know, so it's like it can be daunting to. To have an installer that's based on MSI.
Okay.
So pretty much I think Microsoft, by having that restriction in there, is cutting out a lot of...
Cool. Well, I tell you what we'll do on Channel 9 is we'll go talk to the MSI team and see,
great.
And talk to the certification team and see why we... I mean, I'm sure they have a good technical reason behind why they want to have that as a requirement.
Right.
But this is great to get this feedback.
Sure. I mean, we do have works with Vista certification, you know. But that's the MSI thing's the only thing holding us back from that next level.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? Great to meet you guys.
Yeah.
Nice meeting you. Thanks
you
for
so
having
much.
Us.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you. And congratulations on 20 years. Great software.
Yeah.
Excellent, man.
Awesome.